It was 43 years ago that one of the most unusual carrier landings happened at the fall of Saigon on the USS Midway. Two of the people involved with that were Captain Ed Ellis and Bob Thomas, who was a squadron pilot, all associated with this unusual event. And we're going to ask Ed Ellis to talk through that, explaining to us from his perspective how this unusual carrier landing came to be. Spoiler alert, everything turned out fine for the family in the Cessna 01 who landed on the carrier. Ed, you're part of the National Naval Aviation Museum in Pensacola. But in 1975, what was your job?
Well, I was ship's company on the USS Midway. I was a lieutenant commander, and I was the ship's legal officer. We were in the Philippine op area. Bob was off flying his A-7, dropping bombs on Scarborough Shoals for practice. In that area, when we got the call that the evacuation of Saigon had been ordered as Operation Frequent Wind. So Bob was one of the fortunate ones who got to stay on the ship because most of the air wing was offloaded in the Philippines to make room for the Air Force 10 CH-53s that were going to use us as their landing field. So we got underway quickly and headed offshore Vietnam, and where we steamed in circles for about a week waiting for the evacuation to start. In the meantime, I was in charge of all the planning for getting ready to receive about a little over 3,000 refugees.
So Bob Thomas is also associated with the National Naval Air Museum as a volunteer, also lives in Pensacola. So Bob, pick up the story from your perspective.
Right. So I was an A-7 Corsair II pilot in Attack Squadron 93. And when the H-53s flew out to the Midway from Utapau, Thailand, and arrived on the ship, they needed, each squadron was actually two separate squadrons, five helos each. They each needed a ready room to plan and plan their future missions and also somewhere where they could just kind of hang out. So the 21st Special Operations Squadron helicopter pilots shared our ready room. We only had eight pilots on the Midway. They had never been on a ship. Their first landing on a ship was their arrival from Utapau, so they were pretty pumped up about that, landing on a moving ship at sea. So they went, had their ready rooms assigned, and probably the funniest story I remember from the Air Force zoomies, as we call them, on a Navy ship, was at about 5 in the afternoon on the first day they were aboard. Me and the other pilots in the squadron, we were in the ready room just kind of hanging around, and the door opens, and in come the Air Force pilots in civilian clothes, and they asked us where the O Club was and why weren't we changed into our civilian clothes yet. Well, of course, on a carrier, there is no O Club. We never wear civilian clothes. So they kind of never lived that down the whole time they were on the ship. But they were a great group of guys. Ed probably would tell us a little bit more about the actual helicopter operations from his standpoint. But one of the kind of interesting and sad things about the squadron that was using our ready room was that one of the pilots, he was the first lieutenant. I was just a lieutenant JG by the name of Rich Vandergeer. 2 weeks later in the Mayaguez incident, his helicopter was shot down and he was killed. So that was kind of sad. But 2 weeks before that happened, we had no idea that was going to happen, and it was kind of a different scenario.
Once we got the order to execute, I got with the various divisions on the ship. We knew we were going to be receiving a lot of Huey helicopters, and so the engineering department made up some wheeled pieces to put under the skids of the Hueys so we could angle them and stack them down one side of the flight deck. The air department came up with an idea of having ropes and air flight deck crew to lead people from the helicopters to safety. Supply laid in an extra supply of rice and all of the bubble wrap they could find in Subic Bay to cut into mats for people to sleep on in the hangar bay. And we rigged up heads on the elevators with running water in them. So we really spent about 10 days preparing for the evacuation. The first helicopters that flew, of course, were the Air Force helicopters bringing people out of the embassy compound. And then the second and third day is when we started receiving Vietnamese helicopters. And it was on the third day that the little 01 bird dog flew over. He tried three times to drop a note on our flight deck. On his third attempt, he put the note in his holster. We had been turning the ship. When you turn an aircraft carrier, it makes a real flat area in the water. Turning the ship to make a flat area for him to ditch in. And when we got his note, it said, "I have my wife and five children on board. Please clear your airfield so I can land." Well, Admiral Harris, Bill Harris, was the admiral on board the ship, and Captain Larry Chambers was the commanding officer of the ship, and I went up with Captain Chambers and to see the admiral to brief him. The admiral recommended against bringing him aboard because at that point in time we had about 50 Vietnamese helicopters on our flight deck pulled off to one side. And Captain Chambers said, "That's my ship, my decision. I'm not going to put that family in the water." And the pilot got out. His wife and two children were in the back seat, and there were three kids in the tailboat. And none of them could swim. So we basically saved seven people because of Captain Chambers' decision to more or less ignore what the admiral said and bring the aircraft aboard. After it was over, I went up to brief Admiral Harris, and I said to him, I said, "Admiral, that plane belongs at the museum in Pensacola." And Admiral Harris agreed with me, and I didn't think anything else about it. But I wound up in Pensacola about 2 months later, and that plane was here. It turns out that Admiral Harris coerced the supply officer in Guam, where we offloaded 103 Vietnamese aircraft, to crate this thing up and ship it to Pensacola. So that was kind of my experience with that 01 Bird Dog, and it of course hangs here in our Hangar Bay 1. Major Bung Lee, who was the pilot, the crew gave him about $5,000 to get settled in the States, and he settled in South Florida, was a very successful grocer, and all five of his kids are professionals, and they periodically come up here to see their airplane. So that's kind of the story of that airplane landing on our flight deck. In the course of the evacuation, we only shoved about three helicopters over the side, and we offloaded 103 Vietnamese aircraft in Guam when we got to Guam.
Was Major Lee an O-1 pilot for a big portion of the war, or do you know much about his history?
He had been in the Vietnamese Air Force for a number of years and had been primarily, in my conversations with him, he spoke English. He had been flying the O-1 as an artillery spotter most of his time.
So he knew the plane well, and based on what I saw, he had no trouble putting it down on the deck.
No, we were afraid he was going to land a little long, and that's the reason we had lined people up across the flight deck. Was just, it's a light airplane, and you could get enough people to grab the wings, you could stop it. But we didn't need to do that, and it was quite a celebration when he got aboard successfully.
You lined people up to run up behind the airplane and grab it on the wing strut and help slow it down if that was necessary?
No, we lined it up and lined them up in front of him. So if it looked like he was going to be going too far, they were going to try and grab portions of the airplane to slow it down.
My goodness.
Yeah, in extraordinary times, the kids on the flight deck do extraordinary things. You know, the average age is about 19 years old out on the flight deck.
Yeah, so there's not a whole lot you can't do when you're 19.
That's right. We wound up processing about 3,500 refugees, 3,300 and something. The people like Bob were helping us throughout the ship with Vietnamese families, getting them transferred to helicopters to go to other ships that were going into the Philippines. So Bob was one of the contingents that was left on board the Midway to protect us. We had a portion of our air wing still on board in case there was any kind of an air threat, but fortunately there was not.
Bob, did you see this landing occur?
Oh, yes. We've been assisting during the morning with all those extra refugees that were arriving on the South Vietnamese helos, and that kind of died off, it seems to me, around noon or 12:30. So we went back to our ready room. There was probably about a half-hour lull, and then we were watching. Every ready room has a TV screen, a TV set in the ready room, which is not for necessarily watching, shows and movies, but for watching aircraft land. It's a pilot training aid type thing. And so the camera was on, and it was kind of just, doing nothing because there was nothing in the air. All of a sudden, it swung up in the air, and we could see the O-1 on the TV set. So we went up on the island, on one of the catwalks up on the island, and several of the other pilots in the squadron, up on what's called Vulture's Row, appropriately enough. And we went up there, and we got up there. He'd already dropped the note. And so we watched the flight deck being rearranged so that the angle, the landing area, could be opened up for him to land. But they probably moved helicopters for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then we didn't know it because we hadn't seen the note or heard exactly, how much fuel he had. But the air boss, who is the he's in control of kind of what you would call a control tower on a carrier, that came up on the flight deck loudspeaker and basically said, "We're out of time. Push the helicopters on the fantail overboard." So we pushed off couple of Hueys and a Chinook. Once they went in the water, Captain Chambers put the ship into the wind, so we had a nice headwind down the flight deck. Major Boom Lee, whose radio didn't work, they were trying to tell him all the important things about trying to land on a carrier, even though he'd never seen one that didn't have a tail hook. Turned out he had no radio, so he just did this all on just his experience and skill flying the O-1. He just did kind of a dove into a base leg and turned final. The only thing we were really worried about is, you know, as carrier aviators, was that the ship was steaming pretty fast. We probably had about 20, 25 knots of wind down the flight deck. And when the ship's going that fast, you get a lot of turbulence. We call it the burble, right at the very back of the flight deck, not only from the island that sticks up, but there's also the air that goes down the flight deck tends to settle off the end. And we thought, well, he's going to try to land on the very end of the ship, and if he does that, the burble's going to suck him down into the back of the ship. But he knew what he was doing, so he came in at just a good angle. He didn't come in flat and just try to put it on the end of the deck. He touched down where the wires, our arresting cables, would have been. We had them removed, so he touched down in a real good spot, and like Ed said, I don't think he rolled 200 feet and he was stopped. As soon as he stopped, I mean, probably before he came to a stop, propeller was still turning and a lot of the flight deck guys were out grabbing onto the wing struts. And of course, at that point, he pretty much stopped, killed the engine. The door opened and all seven of them got out and everybody was really amazed and really happy.
So, Ed, do you think Captain Chambers' decision was motivated at all by politics?
Oh, no, not at all, I think. Captain Chambers was the first black commanding officer of an aircraft carrier, and just a super quiet individual. Blew up occasionally on the bridge if you screwed up, but he was thinking about the family on board. That's all he was thinking about, and he wanted to get them aboard the ship safely. And of course, he was concerned about ship safety as well. But he figured that little O-1, even if it banged into the flight deck, can do much damage to an armored flight deck. He was really concerned about the safety of the family. When he found out that there were kids on board, I think that changed the whole equation.
That's Captain Ed Ellis, who was the ship's legal officer for the USS Midway in 1975, and Bob Thomas, who was a squadron pilot, who both had a role in this most unusual carrier landing as Saigon was being evacuated in the mid-1970s. Folks, thank you so much for talking to us at AirVenture. Wish you were here with us.
I missed it this year, but I've been there before, and I always enjoy it.
You're listening to EAA Radio.